Tonight, I'm going to talk on the subject of karma. And for the fun of it, I looked it up in the encyclopedia. I never did before in all these years. And what it said was that it is a cosmological principle and that it really has to do with rewards and punishment of actions taken in this life. This is the definition. I think it's Webster's, isn't it, downstairs in the library? Now, I thought it was interesting. I think the interesting part to me was in that it said it was a cosmological principle. I don't think that I agree in the rest of the definition completely, because I think we think of it too much as rewards and punishment. I mean, that everything we have in life depends upon what you do now, and that if you don't do it right, you get punished. And that life, therefore, is a series of rewards and punishment. Isn't that really the idea associated with karma? I think, personally, this is a very simplistic way of looking at it. And I like the idea about that it is a cosmic principle, because karma is a law, that's what we in the Theosophical Society believe, and I personally completely accept. It is a principle, and it has to a certain extent got to do, of course, with the actions and feelings in our life. But of course, really, and this is not what I'm going to talk about it so much tonight, is from the theosophical point of view, we associate the idea of karma with reincarnation. I mean, first of all, we accept the idea that each one of us is primary, to use a simple word, a soul. This is comes back into an incarnation of what we are living now. And that during this long journey which the soul makes, we associate with a great many people. Now, if we look at our lives, the things which happen to us, of course, there are tragedies. I'm going to come to all that. But some of the most difficult things to overcome and the most difficult to deal with are our relations to one another. Would you agree with me? I mean, they are really what make our lives really, what would you say, fruitful, sad, or give rise to a great deal of bitterness and anger. And yet, and I think today, this is almost worse than ever, because the funny thing is that the word karma, you can read it really in newspapers, you can read it in your dictionary, and all sorts of odd places. So thousands and thousands of people accept in some form, and we call it in theosophical terms very often, the law of cause and effect. We often, and this is, I think, one of the strange things, when we do something wrong, if you put your hand on a hot stove, the reaction would be you burn yourself. That's the obvious thing to say. I mean, could we say that's stupidity? Well, in Buddhism, of course, in Buddhism, what the Buddha stressed was that ignorance was the cause of the mankind's suffering. And of course, this is, I think, true to a very great extent. But let's come back to karma. As I see it, karma, in other words, which is associated with that idea of rebirth, means that many of us have been associated and have related in one form or another with one another before. And I think there is one thing which all of us have experienced. Don't you think you meet sometimes somebody and you feel at home? It's not a good way of saying you feel that there is an exchange possible. You have this sense of that you have met before, and sometimes you may meet somebody and you may really feel closer to them than to your own family. Haven't all of you really experienced this in your life? And also, some people, not everybody has this, they meet not only people, but they come to places. I remember a friend of mine, he was a Dutchman who did a great deal of traveling, and he came to Florence once, and he looked at the Medici Palace, and he was very upset because he didn't know what he was talking about. But he talked to the guard, and he said, "Where are all sorts of tables, all sorts of ornaments, etc.? Have things been moved?" He suddenly, in other words, felt that he had been there and certain objects were missing. I think that's a rare experience. But I think some people sometimes have that. Now let's come to what I think is karma. I'll try to. It's a very complex subject. But I think what we really misunderstand is this. One man explained it to me in one way. He said that if I slapped him, that sometime or other, somebody else would slap me. That's about as simplistic a way of describing karma as it is possible. I don't think that we can think of it that if we do or if we feel something, the same thing is going to be done about it. I think a lot of people do. That man who explained it thought he understood it. I completely disagree with that. Because I think it's very much more difficult, because we really forget that motivation is a very important part in our life. And very often, we are not aware of what motivates us. Don't you think that is true? We have an instantaneous reaction. And yet, what is behind that is so much stronger. We don't know what it is. And I think when we think of absolute physical acts, we have to think of the emotional component which is behind it. And thus, also we can, I look at it from a slightly different point of view. It's not only the motivation, it is also, could I say, we put a certain amount of energy in our acts and emotion. Does that idea sound strange to you? Hold up your hand. I mean, sometimes we do something without really any much feeling about it. We don't put a great deal. We do it out of a matter of habit. Am I making that clear? That I call is not using something, using a great deal of energy. If we, for instance, hate somebody, really hate somebody, whatever you do, whether you actually physically do something or not, you are projecting a great deal of strong feeling against it. You might almost feel murderous towards somebody, and not in any way do something. Am I making that clear? We cannot say it is only acts. It is the drive of our feeling as we project it. From my own experience, I would say this. I've done a lot of counseling with children in my life. And sometimes what really changes their lives is either that they have been present in tremendous hostility between parents, whoever it is, am I making it, they have been in the middle. And they constantly in the middle. And they may not have been personally hurt, but even sometimes not being only in the middle, but this feeling being directly straight at them has a tremendous effect upon somebody who is growing. And I think we don't realize how it can stunt them for many years because there is an innate fear which grows up. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Because I have seen a lot of children like that. And now you can say, the parents, nobody has done anything physically. Isn't that true? The child has been in between. And there, I think, is one of the basic things which we do not understand about this law of karma. It isn't only the things we physically do. It is the things we feel. Am I making it? And how we project that. Is that a new idea? It sounds sense, doesn't it? It's part of our makeup. It is part of the effect which we have on others. Thus, in our relationships, I think karma, as I see it, acts in many ways. First of all, each person, of course, is born in a family. That's the most obvious thing to say. Being born in a family, in a country, from my point of view, this is part of, could we use the word destiny? I think there is no other word to say it, is there? I mean, it's the best word I can think of. Once being born in a family makes one sometimes have a relationship which does not mean something too much, but very often relationships in a family really affect one for the whole of one's life. In today's society, people walk out a great deal out of anything which is unpleasant. I personally believe, I mean, this is, I feel, how karma is, that if one is born in a situation, that if one walks out of the situation, what can I say? I think you really never walk out of it, really. Am I making that clear? You haven't worked out of it. Now, how, if one can work out or walk out of a situation in a different way, let me, the two binding emotions are hate and love. Now, they are different sides of the coin, you might say. But people are very much bound together by hate, aren't they? I mean, it's really in the background of people's mind. And love, of course, is the opposite side of the coin. People are really closely bound together. And I think those two ties from my point of view of karma, bring people together. They are the two strongest bonds. Now, to think that one is bound by hate is a very painful thought, isn't it? And I think the only way to see it, and I mean, I've done a lot of talking about this in personal relations, is to really ask the question whether one continues to wish to have this relationship there till there is a change. Are you still following me there? Or could one, and here is the most difficult question, could one understand one's own motivation, and could one understand what drives the other person? I think trying to understand without reaction, in other words, automatically continuing the hate, if one can come back to, I think, which the innate quality, which is, I think, from my point of view, in every person, I personally believe, and this is certainly the theosophical teaching, is that within us is a point of consciousness which we can call the soul, which has always, could I call it in ordinary language, a long-distance point of view. Could I say it that way? I think it's one way of that. And I think everyone has that ability. If they wish, I like the word, if you don't mind, of saying withdraw in quietness within oneself for a moment. I think it's one way. If we are driven by very strong emotions, we cannot achieve that point of view of being able to really understand something about oneself, but also the person one has such very strong feeling against, even if injustice is involved. Now, I think this desire to have for a moment of quietness and have this long-distance view is important in dealing with this issue. If one understands somebody else beside ourselves, one could say, I understand what the person I have this very antagonistic relation is about and why, but you can also say, I do not wish to be involved. Now I'm going to come to a very important point in karma. I don't think that most of us can do anything about the circumstances, the family we are born with, can we? We are born. I don't say that we can't change the circumstances, but the initial circumstances is our karma. There's really nothing we have to accept. Now, there comes the very difficult question. Can one, even if one can see this particular fact, there are certain circumstances. If I really think in my life, as I have dealt a very great deal with sickness, not my own, let me say that. I think certain people, you might say, are born with things and strikes against them, isn't that so? They have many infirmities. They have many children are born that. They have a great deal of pain. And I always am surprised, and I admire them very much, those people who have accepted, could I say, their limitations. I mean, if limitations. They've assessed their limitations, and yet within them, they have had the sense that they can overcome the limitations because they are developing these other characteristics which can make them creative, which can make them deal and really overcome that. I mean, I often think, and I think she is often mentioned, I think in this, I've never met her, is Helen Keller, isn't that so? She was born, but you might say, everything against her, wasn't she? And there comes, I suppose you could say, there was the good karma. You all know her life, that she was born deaf, dumb, all of these things. And what came to her aid was this wonderful woman teacher. Am I making that clear? There isn't only the infirmities. There isn't only that, the infirmities she was born with. You can say we're there. And let me say this. I don't think here I'm going to fight with most people's ideas. I don't like the idea of punishment of always. Am I making that clear? Take Helen Keller. Though her infirmities were enormous. But obviously, here was a soul, could I say this, who had a tremendous determination. She had the good fortune, in other words, to contact this teacher who really taught her the sign language, etc., etc. And she, when you might say a gate opened for her, or a door opened for her, to develop her own creativity, speaking all these sort of things, with all these things against her, she developed enormously, but she really became a beacon almost for thousands and thousands of other blind people who were also given a chance, weren't they? And I will tell you a story which was told to me by a friend who is a physicist of mine. And he was in a room with her. I think she was introduced to everybody, but she had to leave. And to his astonishment, he passed her. She passed him, rather. And to his utter astonishment, when she came and stood before him, she said to him, "It was nice to meet you, Dr. Magna." Now, how did she really know it? In one way, she had never met him or anything. And she said something appropriate and nice. I mean, he never got over this extreme astonishment of her astonishing memory, insight, and being able to contact the person in an out-of-the-ordinary way. Am I making a special awareness which she developed? And thus, there, she had the opportunities by the teacher because she took the opportunities. She was given the greater opportunities of meeting all sorts of people who helped her to expand. And through, by being a symbol, she was able to really help hundreds and hundreds of people. Am I making that clear? Maybe her great misfortune was a misfortune and yet an opportunity. Am I making that clear? Maybe in an ordinary life, those opportunities might possibly not have happened. And that's why I think people who overcome these disabilities, I think sometimes are being given a much faster, can I use that word, to develop spiritually in every way. Could I use that word? I think it's a good word to say the word faster, isn't it? And yet all this comes in what I call that framework of karma, the misfortune born. Now many, many people today, I mean, I was, as probably you all saw that television show, which I don't know, but a couple of days I saw there in a children's hospital in Boston. They're doing surgery on children. They had tremendous physical deformities, particularly on their face. Did you see it? Anybody beside me? And how? You did. Good. And how? It looked horrendous, if you wish to know the truth. The operations. They came out of that looking normal and were able, in other words, nobody shuddered when they saw them. Am I making that? They were able to behave and run, and they behaved normally. So that again, I think in all our lives, so many, many times, as I said, why a person is... why a person has these misfortunes, I don't think we should ever say, what has he done in the past to deserve it? Am I making that clear? I think that's a terrible thing. Can I say that? I really feel that. Because then we are sitting in judgment. Am I making that clear? We don't know, do we? But us sitting in judgment, we may block ourselves from helping somebody else. Am I making that clear? It is the subject we don't know, do we? Our relationship is really that if there's any way we can help somebody, this is our karma. Am I making that clear? What a person has done, not done, that's not in our thing. We each one have our ability, and sometimes reaching out into that, I think we grow ourselves beside helping somebody else. Because I think so many people have asked me, and it always horrifies me, can I say that? I'm blunt. When they see somebody, you know, who's unfortunate, they ask me, what do I think is his past? That's none of my business, isn't it? My business is one, to help. If I possibly can, in any way I can. Because I believe, like in Helen Keller, the opportunity in opening a gate or a door for somebody is also in both the person's karma, like the Miss Sullivan who helped Helen Keller. Now, in our relations, I think if we really, even if we are justified, and something to have deep resentment, am I making that clear? We have been unjustly treated when we are a child, any time like that. It is foolish, now I'm going to say it, to hang on to that deep resentment. Because this binds us to the person. If he could really understand that, I don't say, I'm not suggesting that you can feel deep love for the person you just had deep resentment for. Am I making that clear? I think that's very difficult to ask. But what makes continual, can I say, bad karma, bad energy exchange, is if you flare up back and forth, if somebody throws anger at you, the human, we are human being, we flare back. I mean, that is natural, isn't it so? If we continue this, how many of you have heard of Edgar Cayce? He did a lot of work on past incarnations and all that. And I've been myself quite often at the Cayce Foundation. The one thing which came out of a lot of the work which he did It's one point which struck me, is how people, if you accept his theory of reincarnation after reincarnation, is that they made the same mistake continuously. Did you notice of anybody of you said they made the same mistakes? Because, and this is mine, not Casey's idea, it because resentment is one of the most difficult things to be willing to give up. It really is a very difficult emotion to give up if you feel that somebody has either hurt you or somebody else. Am I making that clear? And I think, I mean, there's a lot in families, there's a lot of resentment, there is a lot of pain very often. And yet, I think to free oneself from that resentment and from that particular relationship in karma, am I making that clear? It is the one thing we, each one of us, have to learn to be giving up. It's not that you can love somebody. I think what you can say, that person is stuck in violence, whatever it is, in unpleasantness. If I can look at that person, be still when fury is given to me, be in that moment of silence for one moment, and learn, now listen carefully to what I'm saying. I'm not saying love. I'm saying it over and over again. But you could try to project the feeling of willing to have peace for that person, couldn't you? If you see somebody distraught, even if they are angry with you, if you could really project a sense that you hope that they can have peace within them, you're beginning to break that bond of resentment. Am I making that? And the funny thing is, if you don't react towards a person, that person slowly doesn't react to you. You'll find it seems hard to believe, but it is the truth. It's a constant reaction which keeps this resentment going and all that. So I really feel, if anybody is bound, I feel it's really an imprisonment in the karma of resentment. I think it's one of the longest lasting, in other words, and the most difficult ones to get over. Now I have only talked about the negative. I think about love, I think, of course, it is a bond which is very close to people. And I think here comes two difficulties which we do not understand quite often. Let's talk about death for a moment. We love somebody, and there is death. Even if a person is suffering, this is, I think, very much the theosophical idea, that people get terribly upset because somebody has passed on, and yet they were suffering. Isn't that true? And we think it is the worst thing which can happen to that person. I think from the theosophical point of view, I have felt, and I deal with it quite a lot, it is that death is a release. Am I making that clear? that person, after all, the pain is here. And if a person can accept that, as I say, with karma, there is this idea that each person is a soul, that the bond of affection is something which continues. So if a person is freed by dying, we can be happy. I mean, really feel genuinely grateful that they are released from tremendous pain. Am I making that clear? Not resent it, but also in here, I think I was talking a couple of years ago to a great, great friend of mine. And she had been married, oh, I think 55 years. And they had been very close. He was a big industrialist. And everybody, she was sort of in a daze. Am I making that clear? And everybody, you know, surrounded her. And everybody said how sorry, and they were weeping with her. But I didn't see her. I just wrote her a letter, I think. Maybe I phoned her. I can't remember. And I said the one thing, and I always say it, I'm sending you thoughts of love. But I think you and I both should send thoughts of love to your husband. Am I making that clear? And she said when she got my letter, I think it was a letter, it was like a heavy cloud lifted from her. Am I making that clear? She felt she could do something. Am I making it? All the people were crying and weeping. Am I making that? He died. And I think this is also the most difficult thing to do, to not think of how sorry I am to have lost the person, because I, from our theosophical point of view, we haven't. But to send out the positive thing, that when a person goes through a transition, one sends love. Am I making that clear? I think it makes you feel closer to that bond, which to me is always there. Now, about karma, to come back to it, about love, the other really positive emotion, I think, for instance, in parents and children, I think the difficulty is to think, if we are very close to a person, to realize that each person still has his own karma and his own destiny. Isn't that true? And it may not be the thing which we imagined or wanted. Am I making that clear? Because each one of us is following something and listens to something of the past and is following that. Am I making it? And the tremendous disappointment, often pain, which is associated with the love, which often in relations wants to follow your own pattern, your own, what could I say, what's a good word? Is that true? Does it happen in families? I think it does, doesn't it? And I think here again, karma is in a family, but the person in a family is also, even a child, has future developments in relationship, haven't they? And we don't know what they are, do we? I think this is an important thing to remember, isn't it so? To continue to be open about this, and as I say, I'll say it again, I've said it in this place, but I'm a lucky girl. I've always felt tremendous gratitude towards my parents. So that's very lucky, isn't it? That's a very lucky beginning to my life. Because, as I've said, I'm the only girl in my family. And my parents, when I was, 11, 12, something, they put it to me, the choice to me, not to them. I had an opportunity to go to another country, and they said, this choice is yours. We will help you whatever you choose. And we were a very close family. And I chose to go. It was hard for me, too. But you see what I mean? They gave me freedom. Am I making it or made it possible to follow something which I felt was the thing I should do? Am I making that clear? And that's a young age to give a person complete trust, isn't it, Joe? Complete trust and letting them go from them. And I've all my life, therefore, felt a gratitude to my family, and we've always been close together. But that's a difficult thing for people to do, to have enough love. Am I making that clear? To let a person feel what their destiny, their feeling might be, isn't it? I think that's one of the hardest things for parents to do. And I think in human relations, karma, here comes it again. Karma are either the misfortunes, if we can call them misfortunes, the gifts, whatever one is born initially with. But they are also, they can be opportunities. If we can give people, an opportunity to express some of the things which they feel they can do. Help other people, but also, and here it's about our relations to come back. I often feel, and I'm asked this question, I suppose, 1,000 times, and I'm not exaggerating in my long life. People want to know, how can I say it? People go away, they have difficulties, but I think if we break a relationship, it isn't always wrong to break a relationship. Am I making that clear? If one keep, that's part of the karmic relationship sometimes, very often. If one can do it, and this is the hard part, in such a way that there is no resentment. I always come back to that. See, that you are able, whatever it is, if people need it, to give them goodwill. Does that make sense? Does that make sense or not? I'm not asking for the impossible. But I think if I can really be free of that, the bonds which bind people together can be far less painful if we could remember that. Because I personally believe that we are born in this life, and there comes the karma, for the purpose of really spiritually growing and to deal with this idea of love and resentment, for giving people a chance to grow together. I think it's something which we all have to learn sometime or other. And a great deal of people's happiness, future happiness, present happiness, is, I think, accepting the bonds which we are born with. I think, again, I'm fortunate. I really feel that. I've always been grateful to my parents because, first of all, they've given me that freedom. But I think my parents and I have always, they did. We have been in a relation of friendship. Am I making that clear? It isn't so father and mother or anything like that. I think it has been a relation of friendship. And don't you think that is the most important thing, to have that relation of friendship? And so many, many people I know really can never, it hurts. I mean, I'm sorry for them. Because I think my relation to sickness, I've done seen so many sick people in my life. Let me tell you one more story. A lady I saw, she came to me with terminal cancer. She was as thin as a rail. And she couldn't swallow. I mean, she had great difficulties. Of course, she didn't. I mean, that's... Well, she came there. And I finally had a long, long talk to her about her. And what she had was tremendous resentment. Am I making that clear? Tremendous resentment against somebody. And she didn't realize the depth of her resentment. And let me say, she had terminal cancer. She knew it. I mean, well, I think we talked it over. And she realized that there was a different way of looking at it. Am I making that clear? We were together for 5 days, this lady and I. And I think on the third day, she made up her mind that she was going to break it, and she was able to eat. That's the first thing. For the rest of the time, she ate like a horse, you might say, because like that. And what was wonderful, she was, I should think, in her 60s. And the last day of this place, she expressed her happiness. I mean, if you had seen this lady when she came in, you know. She took part in a play. She wrote a song and a piece of music to express her joy. And her last night, which is really a performance, she said how very happy she was. Am I making that clear, knowing all that? And her doctor phoned me in about 6 months or so after, she was so far all right, that she'd gained 10 pounds. So let me say this. Just, she knew, of course, she probably a person who knew she was terminally ill, am I making that clear, realized that she had to understand that she didn't want, she wanted to resolve her problems. Am I making that clear? And I think she did. And I really have lost contact with her. But I've never seen in 3 days such a, in a cancer patient, somebody who would eat like that. And such a tremendous change because she consciously and willingly gave up a resentment and said that was finished in her life. And she did it. Am I making that clear? She really did it because she left a totally different human being. Am I making that clear? In the way she walked and everywhere. And there, let me say this about karma. Maybe I was the instrument we met together so she could break that resentment. Am I making that clear? And she took then, I didn't do anything else but open a door for her. She did it. Am I making that clear? And I think, and here, and I learned the lesson. Because it's rare when somebody with a terminal sickness will come to you and say, and that they really are changing. I mean, are willing to put their what they think may be their last energies. Am I making that clear? In really radically changing, like she did. And I feel I was happy, because now here comes the other point I want to make. Changing one's outlook in life, changing these patterns. I mean, you could say this lady, she had the cancer, which is here karma again. She didn't even fear death after that. Am I making? She had overcome that. She was accepting it. But changing at any time and changing these patterns, which come from the past often, of negative, constantly negative interactions. Am I making that clear? I think, and here comes what I understand about karma. A lady like this, who changed so with tremendous effort, was an inner revolution, you might say, would be able to change that karma for the future. Does that make sense? Because she had done a tremendous transformation in a very short time by accepting many things, a death included. Am I making that clear? And I think by that, how could I put it? Could I say a transformation like that wipes out a lot of energy which may be in future store of one. Does that make sense what I'm saying, or does it make no sense what I'm saying? And I think this change, effort like this is enormous, isn't it? And she her understanding, her spiritual development grew, and that is how it happened. Now let me just say one more thing. I think karma, we all, every one of us has that. We spiritually grow, and we grow freer by the way we can decide. We may not be able to decide our physical infirmities. We may not be able to decide how we die, whether we have diseases or not. But what is in our power, and there is choice, is our attitude and how we react. Am I making it? Whether we are going to continue these negative presence. I mean, this particular lady, she would have died at that reason full of bitterness. Am I making that clear? I think this attitude, how we take it, how we react, is the great chance each person has to grow spiritually, but also to make changes in one's karma. And now I'll open it for questions.
Okay, early on in the talk, you mentioned that you didn't like the idea of asking, when you see an unfortunate person, what did they do? But I appreciate that point, and I understand that a person who has some disability is, in a sense, getting a chance to accelerate their development. Do you then say, or do you take the concept further and say that karma has no concept of balance in it?
The whole thing is balancing, of course. I mean, the concept, well, this is what I said first, contradicted. You mean, most of you are not likely to understand what is the past of a person, do you? It's, I mean, why worry about it?
I guess what I'm making the distinction between is, there. If you're going to call the concept of karma a cosmological principle,
yes,
then in some sense it has what we would call an objective reality.
Yes. Okay.
And what you were talking about early on in the talk is our subjective perception then. How do I think about that objective reality? So whether or not, okay, I look at that person and I say, what did they do? Okay, might there not be that objective element existing there? Now, might it not be my responsibility to put that aside, so to speak, because I don't know what might have happened in the past.
Yeah.
I look at this person and I say, yes, they have a disability, but, you know, I all I can do is do for them the best that I can. And I should not sit in judgment because we just have this feeling that it is not for us to judge.
You think that's wrong what I said?
No, I think that's absolutely right. But behind that, from the purely objective level, if I had the eyes of God,
yes,
is that how disability is doled out? Because of, for example, let me use the example of Helen Keller. If I had the eyes of God, was Helen Keller a person who perhaps tortured people or something like that? Is there an objective basis?
Oh, I get what you. I didn't get your. Till you said that, I didn't get what your question was.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that the karma is a balancing, and I am sure that Helen Keller probably was working out whatever she did in life. But I feel as a human being, I really leave it to God, isn't that
okay.
So? Because I am, none of us maybe ever know about that, is that so? Oh, I completely agree with you there.
And it's not a cosmological law, as you said. It's not reward and punishment in the usual sense that people think of reward and punishment.
Yes. But, I mean, of course, I mean, I see your point now. At first, I didn't see something. It is a balancing act, of course. It is a balancing act. But in that balancing act, in Helen Keller's case, of course, everything was against her, but everything opened up. Isn't that true?
It seems to me that you can look at individual points. You can look at three, in particular, individual points. And if you treat them by themselves, they are meaningless. And those three points, of course, would be karma, reincarnation, and dharma.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the world, okay, and you say life is a one-shot deal, there is no reincarnation, then it's also false that karma is false.
Yes, I completely.
Because there are people that do not show a balance.
Oh, absolutely.
They give out negativity all their lives, and they never get negativity back. Okay? So if you reject the one, you cause the others to topple.
Well, I accept all of them, of course.
Right.
Naturally, I accept.
And by the same token, if you accept karma, you must accept reincarnation because of the examples in life that you see of people who aren't showing a balance.
And
so they must show a
without
balance
karma and without reincarnation, there would be no way of working it out in the future. You would be caught in whatever you did wrong, whether you murdered people or didn't murder people. Isn't that so? No. I think I completely, 100%, naturally agree with you. But karma has certainly many, many aspects which are hard. I mean, we'll probably never completely, fully understand. Isn't that true? I mean, but I think you completely, and I completely agree with you. I mean, I don't think we can say, I'm not so stupid to say that there is no evil in the world, because I think that would be too stupid. Isn't that true? I mean, there are people who do very wrong things all the time. I mean, and I think, at least this is my feeling of dharma, that if I can do something against that, even that's my dharma. Isn't that so? Yeah?
I have kind of a question. I have a situation. Well, I'm an adopted child, okay? And it always makes me wonder, since I feel that of my brother and sister, my brother is another adopted child, and my sister is a natural child of my parents. It always makes me wonder, since I feel I learned an awful lot from my parents, both negative and positive,
sure,
ways to behave and ways not to behave. Why, okay, was there a mistake? I mean, were my natural parents having a mistake when they had me, and then somehow it got corrected through the adoption process?
No, I would say this. I mean, I'm asked not exactly that question, but I think having you worked out something for them, didn't it? I mean, it probably brought sorrow, difficulties. I mean, the circumstances, that was it. Yeah. Maybe your link with them was very little except to bring this
affair.
But you had, I don't know anything about your adopted parents, of course, but you were given a different opportunity to work with different. Maybe this brief pain which you had with your parents, etc., etc., was for you not maybe so much, but it was a tremendous karmic event to them because it must have been painful, mustn't it? For them, at least. For you, it may not have been the big karmic relation, but for them, it was very truly. And you, therefore, had a new relation in your adopted karma, which are the, you might say, are the more real relations in that way.
So sort of like nature taking every opportunity to put things where they belong.
That's right. I personally think that's an Eastern idea. It makes a great deal of difference to me, I mean, and I notice that I so absolutely accept the idea of karma, it makes one have a totally different point of view on life, I think, after a while. It really does. I think it changes one's viewpoint about people you meet, one's own life, and everything. I really do. I can't imagine not believing in it or accepting it. I really can't.
Nor?
Yeah.
Do you think you can learn vicariously from someone else's mistakes?
Yeah, I think it could be very good. I mean, we can learn from one another, can't we? All of us do to some extent, don't we?
I think so, too.
Don't you think so?
I think so. Then the question follows in my mind. Then looking at karma.
Yeah.
The cause and effect relationships of the circumstances a person might find themselves in this life, and trying to see the causes for those circumstances from some previous life in an effort to learn. May that be acceptable or, I mean...
Well, you learn. I mean, if the opportunity to learn is part of that karmic thing, isn't it so? It may be a sign that you could change yourself, isn't it so? And take another road. Those things work together, isn't it so? Lots of people are offered opportunities, and boy, they close their eyes tight to the opportunities, and they won't take them. Isn't that true? I mean, anybody who wants to learn, isn't that so, can. Isn't that true? Yes.
I want to ask you a question about this balance. How do you balance a Herod or a Hitler?
What did she say?
Herod or a Hitler. How do you balance Hitler? Or what balances Hitler?
That's a difficult question to answer. I don't know that you can balance Hitler. I think he did an incredible amount of evil.
I was going to say, what does he come back as?
Oh, that's your question. Oh, that I don't know. that I can't answer because I don't know, but he certainly did an incredible evil. But do you think it's possible that it was sort of a cataclysm, which sort of a pent up of a lot of greed of a lot of people, which was symbolized in Hitler, you know what I meant, and tremendous changes. I think people have become aware of a lot of what was simmering in a lot of people. It's out in the open. Do you think that's it? That's not standing up for him in any way, whatever.
He still wouldn't escape the karma.
Oh, he will, he will.
Hundreds of lives.
Oh, heavens, am I saying that he should? I don't, but I can't answer what his life will be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he unleashed a tremendous lot, and he was certainly a personification of evil, isn't that so? But I don't know enough to be able to answer what he is going to come back to. I really don't.
That question raises, or solidifies a point that I was wondering. We talked about balance.
We
talked about the fact that you do think there is evil in the world. From a physicist's point of view,
if you're
talking balance, for a negative charge, you need a positive charge. In the world, isn't it possible, and this might be a way to approach your question, that the balance point is not always zero?
Oh, I agree with you. I don't want to
hurt. There are times when the universe swings towards the balance is negative.
And then it swings.
And then, sure, and it is a cyclic phenomenon built into the universe that we swing back and forth.
Oh, I completely and 100% agree with you. I feel that very much, that there are changes when one thing is somewhat down. I don't think the world is always in balance. But I think it will be imbalanced. But I think there is constantly this. Because finally, let us forget, there's an awful lot of greed in humanity too, isn't it? I mean, I'm not talking about the individuals. We do mass actions which are, we do also things which are, Hiroshima isn't so, is a pretty difficult thing, isn't it? And that sort of thing. So I think at one time, sometimes for a little while, things are out of balance, but I think they balance. Let me say this, don't you think, maybe you don't agree with me, that many, many more people think about things? Or would you not agree? I don't say that they act.
Because of that?
No, of the change of the world. But people are questioning things. Don't you think that people are questioning the atom bomb? They're questioning. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of questioning around. Would you agree with that?
In this country.
Oh, I think everywhere. I travel a very great deal. And it's everywhere. Absolutely. I don't think we are the only country. And there's no country, I think, where there isn't a tremendous lot of questioning in it. And I think that's the dawning of an awareness of all of these things. I don't say everyone is doing it, but a lot of people are.
You see a lot of Soviet people?
We don't see them enough. Maybe they are, too. I mean, I don't know. That's one country I've never been. But I think there is a change. If I think back in my early years, and I've traveled a great deal, I was just thinking today, the world has changed a very great deal, really, in its outlook. I mean, tremendously, I think, it has changed. There's still plenty of green, there's plenty of... I see a lot of sick people, so I see things as they are, to some extent, I think. But I see a change. People question, we can talk much more freely now. We don't know one another, we're talking freely, aren't we? And exchanging ideas. I think that is much more possible today than before, don't you think so?
Yes.